Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy! In 1926, a 20-year-old woman named Trudy Ederle swam 21 miles across the English Channel. She was the first woman to accomplish this feat. Vermont author Glenn Stout immortalized her story in his book, Young Woman and the Sea. It's now been adapted into a feature-length Disney movie coming out next week, starring Daisy Ridley. Glenn Stout is also a writing coach, ghostwriter, editor, and sports writer, and he joins us now to tell us more about Trudy and what it's like to have a book adapted for film. Glenn, welcome.
Thank you very much.
We're so glad to have you here with us in studio. Who was Trudy Ederle, and how did you first learn about her?
Sure. Well, Trudy Ederle was the child of German immigrants. She grew up in New York City. She had measles when she was young and was partially deaf, and she found herself swimming. That's where she was most comfortable. And I came across her story while I was researching another book, and I stumbled across headlines mentioning Trudy Ederle and talking about how she was the first woman to swim the channel. And she was not only the first woman, but she beat the existing men's record by 2 hours when she did so.
2 hours?
And I, yeah, absolutely. It's remarkable. And I thought to myself, why don't I know who she is? Why have I never heard of her? And so I started researching the story. That was back in 2001. Mm. The book was finally published in 2009, and here we are, you know, more than a decade later, and it's finally a film. So it's been a really long journey.
Oh my gosh, what a journey to be on. That's amazing. So Trudy Ederle, she was a woman swimming at a time when there weren't a lot of women athletes, for one, and there just weren't a lot of women swimmers, right?
Well, very few women knew how to swim. Yeah. And in fact, there'd been a disaster in New York around the turn of the century. A boat named the Slocum had burned, and nearly 1,500 people were killed, most of them women, mostly because they didn't know how to swim. Some of them drowned in water that had they only stood up, they would have survived. And that sparked a movement to teach women how to swim, and a group began called the Women's Swimming Association. And Trudy's mother put Trudy and her sister into the Women's Swimming Association so they could learn how to swim. And they started to compete. They were among the first female swimmers to compete. And Trudy was remarkable. At one point, she held virtually every world record you could hold in swimming at the time, from 25 yards all the way up to the English Channel.
Wow.
That would be like Michael Phelps also swimming the English Channel.
It's amazing. And she, there's an innovation too there. She started swimming freestyle,
right,
instead of breaststroke.
Right. Her coach was one of the pioneers of the freestyle stroke, and Trudy mastered it. She was really the first person to use the stroke to swim the English Channel, and that changed how everyone swam the channel from that time on. Hardly anybody uses the breaststroke to try to go across the channel now.
Yeah.
They looked at Trudy and said, oh my gosh, look what we can do, you know, using that stroke. And her record for women, she held that record for almost 25 years. It was that long before another woman could learn to swim it faster than she could.
So what were some of the challenges that she faced in her life?
Well, there were a lot of challenges. For one, a lot of people didn't think women should compete in sports at all. And, you know, there was a lot of resistance to that. And she had to overcome that, and her coach had to overcome that. And then also, you know, when she got over there, she tried twice. And the first time she tried, she was probably poisoned by her coach.
Wait, what?
Her coach, her first trainer to cross the channel, he had quite a cottage industry going, training people to swim the channel. And in all likelihood, he poisoned her and thwarted her first attempt. She was in the water about 6 hours, and then she felt ill and was pulled out. So when she went back the second time, she was adamant. No one was going to touch her. No one was going to take her out of the water. And she had a different coach, a different trainer for that
one. But why would he poison his own trainee?
Well, because he was training a lot of swimmers. And once a woman made it across, a lot of other women would have stopped trying because
They wanted to be first.
So if he could keep keep women in the water, he was going to make some more money. So, you know, so she had to overcome that. She also had to overcome just the social distance of being someone who was partially deaf, you know, all that stuff. So she really overcame a lot. And not to mention just the challenge of being in the water for over 14 hours.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that. When you were doing your research, what did you learn about the physical toll that would take on your body and
your
mind?
It's incredibly tough. I mean, for one, you have to go in and you're covered with lanolin and various oils because of chafing and to help protect yourself against jellyfish. And then there's the monotony of doing the same thing for 14 hours. She would sing to herself. And a lot of people who, you know, marathoners or do long distance events know what that's like. You kind of sing to yourself. But then also the conditions of the water. The English Channel waters are very cold. The tides are, you know, they rush one way and then they rush the other way. So you can't go straight across. You have to go in kind of a zigzag pattern. So even though it's 21 miles across, you end up swimming a lot more than that. She also, when she did it, you know, the weather was fine when she started, but there was a storm midway through. So she's swimming in waves 4 and 5 feet high. And then just before she reaches the coast, she gets pushed into what are known as the Goodwin Sands, which is a shallow area. And her boat that accompanied her couldn't follow her through the Goodwin Sands. So after about 10 hours in the water, she's on her own for over an hour, swimming totally by herself in the middle of the night.
Oh my gosh. Terrifying.
Terrifying, absolutely. And she's 20 years old, right?
Wow.
I mean, imagine.
What a story. Now, did you get in contact with any of her family members while you were researching her life?
I've been in contact with them the last couple of years. I approached them when I first did the book, and they didn't want to be involved, but they've since reached out, and they're very supportive of the film, and I'm in touch with a number of them right now.
Wow. Where do they live?
Well, actually, one of her nieces, I think, lives in White River Junction.
No, get out of here.
There's always a Vermont connection, right? But they're all over the country. She had no children herself, so it's mostly nephews and nieces and grandnieces and grandnephews. Mm.
And how did Trudy Ederle handle her fame once she completed this monumental accomplishment?
Well, you know, if somebody did something similar today, of course, they would embrace celebrityhood and be all over the place and you'd get sick of seeing them. Trudy wasn't wired that way. She really didn't embrace celebrityhood. She didn't like the spotlight that much. So after she swam, she did a few things. She appeared in a silent film and she did vaudeville, but she was a private person. She sort of withdrew, and that's why we don't know about her. That's why she didn't remain in the public eye, because she just wasn't that kind of type of person. She was private and she enjoyed her life.
Mm. Well, I'm so excited to learn more about her in this new movie that's based off of your book. Let's talk about it. It comes out next week. I have a clip from the trailer here. Let's take a listen to that.
I've decided to swim the English Channel.
What do you mean?
I'm going to swim the English Channel.
No, I'm saying.
I wasn't asking. Please pass the bread.
A woman. She won't get past the seventh male.
I believe she'll die in that water.
You know, most men believe that we're too weak to compete.
And what if I make it? Then they got a serious problem. The thing you love most, it terrifies me. I can't imagine if something happens to you.
They're rooting against you, Trudy. They want the water to win.
I came all this way. Might as well see England.
You gotta love that film scoring.
It's terrific.
It's so exciting. How long did this movie adaptation process take?
Well, it was 9 years ago that I received an email from Jeff Nathanson, the screenwriter, wanting to know if the book was available for option. So it's been 9 years since then. We were with two other studios that ended up dropping it. So it's the swimming the channel is a great metaphor for making a movie, because we were very close to shore a couple of times and then the tide changed and we were out in the middle of the water again. But everybody persevered. Everybody was really dedicated to the story. Everybody involved in the picture just thought that Trudy's story needed to be known by more people. It's such an inspiration. It's such a great lesson.
What was it like to see this story become kind of taken under the wing of Hollywood? Were there any elements where you were like, gosh, gosh, I really hope they hold on to this part, or, oh no, what if they fictionalize this too much?
Well, I knew going in that, you know, you're working in a different medium, so changes are going to be made. And I was fine with that because the changes that are made are intentional and purposeful. You know, I can spend 10 pages in a book making a point. In a film, you have to make that sometimes in 3 or 4 seconds. So there are some deviations from the book. But what's important is Trudy's character is absolutely the same. The swim is rendered, you know, accurately. And just as important, or even more important, the relationships she has with her family, namely her sister, which is a core of the book, is also central to the movie. So I was thrilled to see all that come in. Also, the attention to detail in the film is terrific. It looks like it's 1926, you know. It's quite remarkable to see, to finally be able to see some of the things that I could only imagine when I was writing.
Yeah. Did you get to get a little peek behind the curtain of how they did some of this?
Yeah, I was on set in Bulgaria for a week.
Bulgaria?
During filming. Yeah, it was filmed mostly in Bulgaria. Who knew that Bulgaria had one of the biggest film studios in in Europe, and they used the Black Sea for the water sequences. And Daisy Ridley is remarkable. She does virtually all of her own swimming, and she had to train for 3 months with a former Olympic swimmer because she wasn't a very good swimmer. She became a very, very good swimmer. And, you know, they were very dedicated to doing it real. They didn't want to CGI the water and all that stuff. So what you see is actually Daisy in the water doing all of her own swimming.
Well, I hope if there were any jellyfish attacks that those were CGI, at least for Daisy.
The jellyfish are CGI, okay, but everything else is real.
So the film was originally only set to have a streaming release, but it's now going to have a limited theatrical release after scoring well with test audiences. What did it feel like to find out that news?
Well, that was terrific. Even when I was over in Bulgaria, they were saying, you know, we think this is really good. We think we're going to try to go theatrical with it. And then the producer, Jerry Bruckheimer, when they did the test screenings in front of an audience and it scored better than any of his movies ever had, I think Jerry's word meant a lot to Disney when he said, you know, we need to go in the theaters with this. And it's also getting a theatrical release overseas. It's going to be in China. It's in the UK, in Ireland, and I wish it was in Burlington, but maybe it'll do so well it'll get here sooner or later. But it will be streaming later in the summer, so everyone will get a chance to see it.
And you're fresh off a trip to LA for the premiere, right?
That's right. I was in Los Angeles last week for the premiere, got to walk the red carpet, do the press line, go to the after party, and most importantly, see the film with everyone who was involved in the film, which was just terrific to see.
Do you have the bug now? Are you going to be moving out to LA to screenwrite? Or are you sticking around here?
I don't think I can afford the wardrobe.
Well, Glenn, as we wrap up here, I'm curious, you know, now that you've had Trudy Ederle's story so close to you for so many years, what do you hope audiences most take away from her story?
Well, you know, I think it's a consequential story, meaning that I think somebody can see this, particularly a younger woman or a younger man, and realize that women can do things that you might not think they could. I mean, that was the issue back then. It's still an issue today where people underestimate what women can do. And there's a great lesson there of perseverance and that you can try anything. And if you stick with it, there are no barriers. And I think that's a great lesson, particularly for younger people to take away, because the movie is appropriate for all ages, you know. And I'm just happy that, you know, maybe it'll change someone's life in some small way, maybe some significant way.
Well, maybe we'll see some more folks swimming out in Lake Champlain and Vermont's other lakes and ponds this summer because
right.
of this movie. Young Woman in the Sea is in select theaters May 31st. You can also buy Glenn Stout's book by the same name at your local bookstore or online. Glenn Stout, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations on this new step.